Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. I hope this conversation will serve you on your own path of living life fully and courageously. The inner game is our relationship to our purpose, to the contribution we want to be in bringing forth a more beautiful world. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people grow personally and how that strengthens their organizations and various efforts to make a bigger difference. And it's just a chance for me to talk with people that I love about our spiritual lives, which is something we don't often do in a public setting. So I'm so grateful for that. Our guest today is Tara Sheehan, founder of Conscious Global Leadership. Tara is a spiritual warrior and activist, has worked on environmental and social causes like ending fracking and bringing more awareness to the wisdom and rights of Native Americans. So I'm just thrilled to get to chat with you today, Tara.
Thanks, Gwen. It's an honor to be here.
Tara, you shared with me that your own awakening began with Lyme disease when you were 36. How did that start to unfold, a deeper kind of awareness of spirit in relationship to that?
It was an amazing transformation because normally we look at illness or disease as something that happens to us and we must have done something wrong. And I guess initially I thought when I got bit by this tick and I had all these physical pains and situations where I couldn't operate at that level that I was operating at, it was actually a gift, because what happened was I got a lot of my ego, my identity fed by being an athlete and super mom, and always being there for others and not really paying attention much to myself. And as a mother, I think we do that as well, as we have this identity that we have to always be doing things for the kids, and that's really important. But I think we also have these desires, these deep driving desires, that if we don't satiate them, then I think something will come along to remind us, who am I, and what do I want to, who do I want to create myself to be from an authentic place?
Right.
So what the Lyme did is it stilled me. I couldn't walk it was a pretty painful experience, but I felt like a caterpillar going through that chrysalis and becoming a butterfly. I couldn't really walk. And so as I slowed way down, I was telling you in the conversation we had, it was the first time in my life that I connected with nature. I would go out for these walks. We were living in Vermont, and I would look at the sky and I would look at grasses growing up through the frozen lake across the street, and it took my breath away. I just cried, and I said out loud, why did I miss this? How did I miss the beauty of this present moment?
It fascinates me because I know you loved nature and you were out in nature a lot in your life, as many of us are, but I would assume if somebody asked you, you would say, oh, I have a beautiful relationship with nature. So what was that quality that was different that maybe some of us can understand? Oh, yeah, maybe I haven't let myself get as intimate in that relationship as maybe I thought I was.
Well, I think our minds are so busy and we're always projecting what's going to happen in the future, or we're thinking about the things that happen in the past that we don't want to replicate, and that's what the mind's hardwired to do, is to think about the hurts from the past and not replicating them, or projecting the possible future outcomes in a fearful way. And so to keep us safe, to keep us protected. And when we're breathing and we're slowing the breath down, because when the breath slows way down, the mind slows way down, and we can live in a present moment where the past or the future isn't something that the mind is thinking about, we get to experience the leaves of a tree stretching toward the sun, or a berry. Like I remember reading in Tom Brown's book about this indigenous man who was teaching these kids to spend 3 days watching a blueberry bloom, the blueberry plant bloom. And then when it did, it's just like, how we look at fireworks. Oh my gosh, look at that. I mean, wow, you know.
Right.
And how profound that is. And then that bloom turns into a berry and we eat the berry and we savor it. But in our unawareness, in our lack of learning how to breathe through the nose and slowing everything down, we skip the magic of the moment. And it's just learning it.
It's just being present. Yeah, so it's just that happens. The presence showed up in your relationship with nature, and I imagine in all your other relationships, because it's universal when it happens, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because then you become in awe, not just of nature, that watching somebody's
what's available
at somebody's
in
eyes,
every
you know?
Moment, right?
Yeah, or their smile. Or I remember Ananda Giri, this great teacher, was saying, soon when somebody's yelling at you, you'll notice that sweet little crease in their eyes or their and you think, no, I'll be, you know, wanting to get out of an angry conversation. But
right.
when you see there's a beautiful person there yeah. that needs help and they're suffering, it's less about, oh, they're yelling at me,
right.
and more about how can I be compassionate to them
right.
and help them be free.
So what happened with the lime was sort of an identity crisis, as most awakenings are. Start with that, some kind of a dissolution of the role that we'd, or the story that we had about ourselves, and then something else becomes possible. Can you talk a little bit about what started to become possible as you kind of let some things or allowed some things to dissolve about yourself?
Yeah. So what happened was, I was an elite skier, and I wanted to go to the Olympics, and I wanted to win a gold medal, and I trained for that. And then when I had kids, as I grew older, that dream, and it's kind of funny because I think all of us have a secret dream, whether we want to be a rock star. And I say to these listeners, you really want to think about that from your heart. If you were really young and you had a dream that you didn't actualize or manifest, well, that was something that I always had. Whether it was for my ego or not, doesn't matter. It was something that I really desired to do. And when I got bit by the tick, I always say that part of the suffering was thinking that I could never live the dreams that I had. And so I think that often is what happens, is we'll have something that comes in that helps us go within and look at what it is, those deep driving desires that we really want to manifest in our life. But in this situation, so it took away everything, right? I couldn't run, I couldn't walk, I couldn't do anything. And as I was going through this illness, I was working with a therapist, and she said, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I said, to be crippled,
right?
To never walk again, because I didn't go to the death part.
Right.
That came later.
Right.
And so she said, well, go there. Go.
Yeah.
And so I
what
went
would
and sat
like?
In a chair in her office, and I imagined myself never walking again and being in a wheelchair. And this voice inside me said, but you can love. You can love.
Right.
I saw the boys, and at the time I was married, and my husband then, Casey, I just imagined that I could sit in that wheelchair, the boys could be sitting on my lap.
How old were they then?
They were like 3 and 5.
Oh.
And I could just be a presence of love.
Right.
Nothing more, nothing less. And right. it made me really cry and realize I can be love.
Can ever take that away. That can never be taken away.
Exactly.
Oh,
and so when I went and let go of what wasn't happening and what I could be, a lot of healing happened when I saw that.
So as you began to deepen your relationship to spirit, how would you articulate that? What was happening there for you? And then what were the outer indicators that you were operating in a different way than you had been?
One of the practices was just operating more from so if you're talking about relationships, the biggest one was with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the relationships outside me transformed as I transformed the relationship with myself. And part of my work was to love all aspects of who I was. And I was working with another therapist who said, look in the mirror and say, I love you, and see what happens. And I've never done that. I'd never done that. And when I did, I noticed all of this these voices like, look at you, your hair is weird and you're not very pretty. And I was like, who's inside my head?
I'm being so mean to myself.
Exactly.
I notice that often still, you know, how mean, you know, we can be with ourselves, that we'd never be that way with somebody else, or at least we would hope we wouldn't.
Yes, and I think that what happens is when we're growing up, we're never taught to love ourselves, because when we act a certain way, we get punished. It's like a guinea pig, you know, in a lab experiment, you're good, and then you get fed, and you're bad, and you go to your room. And so bad means that we were just showing a true human emotion, anger or sadness or whatever. That's a true human emotion. We're multi-emotional beings. But that's what happens, is that we're punished when we're angry and we're rewarded when we're good. So I saw that. I saw that when I was in certain human emotions that were deemed bad by society, by religion, whatever, then I would punish myself. I would see a really horrible person sitting there. And so when I began to do this exercise, I began to love all aspects of myself. Mm. Tara when she's mad, Tara when she's jealous, Tara when she's resentful, because it's like a child. If when there's a 2-year-old there, and they're acting in those emotions that are real. I mean, they are real human emotions. We want somebody's shoes because they're beautiful, and what's wrong with that? But then, you know, then we're made to think that we should be higher human beings and never be jealous or angry. And so when I began to love all aspects of myself, they say, you know, self-love is that you love all of you, not the part
right.
that's good or
you
whatever.
You have to love the shadows too.
Exactly. Then I began to really live more authentically in that relationship with myself. And then I wasn't holding other people to a certain standard. Oh, well, I like you when you're happy, but not when you're mad.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that acceptance of myself allowed me to accepting of my kids and my partner and all the other people in my life. And I wasn't holding them to some illusory standard of perfection. I just, I loved them as is.
It's amazing how our relationship with self is the relationship to work on. I'm interested in the conversation about how some people see that as bordering on narcissism, and when that is narcissistic and when it's not. Do you ever encounter that or have some insight into that?
I do. It's funny because I think sometimes when we're so much working on ourselves, it can be a little bit obsessive almost. And I think even like we talk about transformation, loving all aspects of ourselves. And I think oftentimes we can get so obsessive about it a little bit. And just go like dig in the garden, you know, go for a walk. Don't get so much about, because I think even that can go into a place where we're thinking too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that like sometimes, because I meditate and I try and show up every day as a joyful person or this or that. And sometimes even working that, I'm like, just, you know, go build a fence or go do just human things so you're not obsessing about being this perfect. And it's not a perfect human being. It's a person that has a self-awareness that when I'm in a suffering state, that I know through that awareness, I can see the story my mind's telling that's creating that reality. You know, whether it's fear around money, fear around love, fear around getting a position at a company or whatever, just to be self-aware of the programming that's running in my mind.
Right. Oh, I'm going to ask you something else, but first we need to take a quick break and say, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Tara Sheehan, and we're talking about a new way of thinking about our relationship with the spiritual and with growth in our lives. When the self is a little bit too much with us, as Gandhi said, he gave the talisman, which is really similar to actually what's coming up in this conversation. He said, think of the, you know, least fortunate person you've ever seen, and will your action that you're contemplating be of any service to that person? We can think of that in a quantum level. You know, will your action be of any service to the upliftment of humanity?
That's a beautiful thing to think about, is will what I'm doing uplift humanity?
Yeah. You were also telling me a little bit about something about when you feel anxiety arising, because that's something we all feel living in this world. There's a certain anxiety attached to all of the uncertainty around us that is sort of the water that we swim in now. What do you do that kind of helps you be where you want to be in the face of that anxiety in the world?
I have to breathe. Mm. That's the very most important part, because when my breath gets really kind of raggedy and stops, and we stop breathing when right. we get into stress. If we have a stressful thought, we stop breathing. And so that's the first thing I notice, is that I need to start breathing. And what I'll do is, if I get into a pretty heightened state of anxiety, I'll put my hand on my lower belly to remind myself, okay, Tara, breathe deeply into the lower lobes of the lungs, because the more oxygen I'm getting into these lower lobes of my lungs, the calmer my nervous system's going to become. And then I'll always think about where I'm sitting. I'll imagine feeling the bones of my sits bones, and that will ground me. It'll take me out of my crazy mind, and it'll ground me. And that's the very most important thing, is are you breathing? Because if I'm triggered, there's a guarantee I'm not breathing.
When that happens, just so that people know the danger of that, is when we stop breathing, explain where we're coming from in that moment.
So when the breath is through the mouth and it's really short and there's not a lot of oxygen going into the brain, the body, we go into our sympathetic nervous system.
Right.
We call it fight, flight, or freeze. And we start sweating. Our heart rate increases. Cortisol starts to be released. Especially if we get really angry, we start screaming. Then we have a huge release of cortisol and adrenaline. And they're very acidic hormones, and they're very degrading to the body, to the organs and heart, everything. And that's what we did when we're running from danger. And yet this is a danger that's coming from a mind, a
right.
thought.
Right.
And so it's very detrimental to the physical and the emotional body.
And then our thoughts come from that place as well. Where
exactly.
it may be just an imagined stressor or not, but then all of our thinking at that moment comes from that place. So the breathing then gives us access to a more ventilated, more expansive, more, as you were saying, from those higher emotions and ways of being, like compassion and empathy and
exactly. And one thing we can do even right now is, so I say I put my hand on my lower belly, and the other thing I'll do is I'll exhale all my air out of the nose. And when I do that, I'll pull my navel toward my spine, and I'll squeeze the vagus nerve. So the vagus nerve starts in the gut, and it runs through all the organs, and it goes up into the cranium, into the brain. And then we can come from a really activated, they call it the prefrontal cortex. I mean, the neuroscience is extraordinary. You can look at it online. But by exhaling and squeezing that real middle of the body.
So just contracting there.
Contracting there.
Right.
And it's a total reset.
Mm.
And then what happens is, and then smiling is critical. I was just reading about how babies smile 200 to 400 times a day. Mm. And as we grow 17 to 20, we smile a day. It's really sad. And so when we're aware that our mind's what creates our suffering, we have a very simple way to breathe. And then we smile when the situation looks crazy in the wrong way, in a negative way. And we smile and we realize at that moment, we have a way to re-perceive the situation as an opportunity for growth.
Hmm.
Because the mind's saying, somebody's going to harm me. It's all about me, right? Me, 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 my image and all that. But when we do very simple resets, we can see there's an opportunity to reconnect with somebody, to create a beautiful world. And it's all on the vision that we're creating in the situation, because the mind works on vision. Right? I always say to people that if you don't have a vision for your relationships, if you're in a relationship with somebody, you're not saying, I want to have a great relationship with Gwen. I want to really connect on a deep level. I want to laugh a lot. I want to, you know, fill in the blank. We have to have visions, because that's where the mind's going to go.
Right. I've noticed so often, maybe you'll go to a lecture and there'll be this brilliant person. I heard Robert Kennedy do this at the Wheeler Opera House, you know, spoke brilliantly about the problems around us. And then you kind of left going, well, what do I do now? You know, I feel sort of worse than when I came here. And there's this dearth of vision of what our future could be like. Like, what's possible to us? What's worth putting our blood, sweat, and tears into? And as you're saying, you know, what can we put into our mind's eye that will help us to manifest? Because without that very specific articulation, words and thoughts and visions of what that specific future could look like, it's hard for us to create it. We're thinking about all the things that are wrong and anxious about all the things that are wrong, but not putting our energy toward the things that we really want. What's something that you envision for the future that just knocks your socks off, that makes it worth facing the challenges of this life?
I love to sponsor people to go through these Being Limitless two-day workshops. And the reason I do that is because I believe we need to invest in our human development. And so my vision is there are so many human beings on this beautiful grandmother Earth that have that capacity to live in a beautiful state, free from a lot of that ego and suffering, have these practices that they do every day. And like they say, it's a tipping point. When we get enough people understanding that we're creating our reality, do we want to create it from fear? Do we want to create it from love and connection? It's our choice and it's our wiring, right? It's the way that we live in a sympathetic nervous system or a parasympathetic nervous system. And so that's been my vision, is that the people that I work with, that they have these practices, these awarenesses, they know the science and the neuroscience of living in a beautiful state, and that we have heads of countries, corporations, systems that live in that state of connection and collaboration. Because you know how it is one person operating from a beautiful state and sharing that? I mean, these heads of corporations have access to thousands. They have millions of people, right? Through whether it's a Facebook or a United Airlines or these systems. And when they're giving this training to their employees, then, I mean, in a very short period of time, those employees are sharing it with their families, or if they're traveling, or, you know, and I always say to people, if you learn a practice, a breathing practice or something really simple, share it with five people to help them live in a beautiful state. And that's what I envision, is that humanity understands this. And then from that place, we reconnect with nature, because nature's the greatest teacher. It's a relative, as they say in indigenous ways. And my beautiful partner in love and life, Scott Red Horse Barda, that's what they gave to us. That was the gift that when we were all indigenous, is that we saw the tree as our external lung. We knew the water, mani, my life is what they call it. It was our life force. We would never pollute it. We would never do these things that degrade and destroy Grandmother Earth. And so from that beautiful state, we begin to restore ecosystem species, because we realize that there are cousins, there are ancestors, there are relatives. And to go and sit with a tree or talk to a dolphin, I mean, we did these things, whether we did them in a physical way of speaking a language to them or doing it intuitively and seeing.
So it's really a different kind of educational process that you're talking about. We would have a different priority for our educational process for all human beings, where there would be a great value on what we call emotional intelligence now. That has been so marginalized in so much of our educational process. We learn all the technical stuff, you know, how to add and write and read, but not how to read the signals of nature and the feelings of each other and our own intuition and all of those things that allow for us to create that beautiful state.
That's exactly right. And you think about what going out and watching a bee. Bees don't sit and gossip about each other in a hive. You know, they're out doing what they're right. meant to do. And
right.
watching a bee really dive into a dandelion and really nestle down there to get that pollen and then go bring it in and, you know, making the honey and all that. I mean, they have a purpose. They're doing it in a beautiful way. And when we look at nature and really, I mean, imagine what we could do when we don't think about all that, protecting our image and this guy's bad and this guy's good. Who, I mean, does that really matter?
Right.
What kind of world do we want to design together?
And the world and, you know, the universe is upping the ante so that we're needing to make these choices, which is a beautiful thing, which is a really powerful era that we're living in. Thank you so much for coming and having this conversation and for all of the ripple effects that it will cause.
And thanks to Gwen for doing the work she does, because she affects millions of people with her beautiful energy, her wisdom, and her desire to make changes from the inside out. It's an honor to be
here. Well, if you have a question for Tara or me, join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. The page acts as a forum to continue these conversations, and you can find out where to listen to the past shows there as well. So we'll look for you there until next time. Thank you so much. Thank you.